Welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. Hello, I'm Eric Jansen. Our topic this week, mental and emotional health. I struggled a little bit writing tonight's intro because I feared sliding into this victimhood language. Us poor queer people with all of our problems brought on by a homophobic, transphobic, unfair society. After all, everyone in this world has issues and challenges to face. It's part of life. But mental health experts say LGBT people are more prone to depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and suicide than the general population. Anti-gay bullying, which has been in the news so much in the past few years, is not just about kids. Adults get harassed too, sometimes attacked and killed. And it's certainly not just queer people who face harassment, discrimination, and high rates of depression, substance abuse, and so on. Many other groups do too. So anyone listening might pick up some great insights over the next half hour from our guests here on Out in the Bay. They're from Queer Life Space, a nonprofit LGBT counseling center in San Francisco's Castro neighborhood that was founded about a year and a half ago after the city's previous primary nonprofit provider of mental health services for queer folks closed due to funding problems. Nancy Heilner is executive director and one of four co-founders of Queer Life Space. She's been a therapist for more than 25 years, starting in rape crisis and domestic violence counseling. And just before forming Queer Life Space, was clinical manager of the adult substance abuse program and the HIV mental health program at New Leaf Services, the San Francisco agency I mentioned just a moment ago that was closed in 2010. Nancy Heilner, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you.
Kip Williams is a graduate student getting his clinical training to be a therapist at Queer Life Space and currently works as a crisis counselor on the Trevor Lifeline, a national around-the-clock crisis and suicide prevention helpline for LGBTQ youth. Welcome, Kip.
Thank you.
Thanks both for being here. Let me start by asking you what you currently see as the toughest or most persistent issues facing LGBT people. What are some of the recurring issues or challenges that people bring in to Queer Life Space for help or to the Trevor Lifeline?
I think at Queer Life Space, people present a lot with depression, relationship issues, concerns about being HIV positive. Over time, I think we realize that a lot of that depression stems from issues around isolation, trauma suffered both in childhood and through their adult life. A lot of people have internalized homophobia that they don't, maybe aren't quite aware of, but that definitely affects their self-esteem and
Can you explain that term a little bit, internalized homophobia?
Internalized homophobia is, it's a state in which people internalize the discrimination, the derogatory messages that people get about gay people or...
So they believe it in a way they hate themselves.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, they hear negative messages about themselves and internalize that and come to believe that there's something wrong with them because they're gay or queer. And that really impacts them in many ways in their life.
Mm-hmm. And Kip, what do you hear on the Trevor Lifeline is primarily for youth. Do you get the same sorts of issues come up? How does that differ, perhaps, than what you see in Queer Life Space?
Absolutely, and I think the trick with internalized homophobia is that often people don't recognize it for being that, and so can't really see, don't maybe understand some of the self-hating that they're doing. But on the Trevor Lifeline, we really get all kinds of calls, everything from from young people who are being bullied in school or who just want some advice or some support on how to come out to their family and friends, all the way, to people who are actively thinking about killing themselves or the families and friends of young LGBT people who just want to know how to support people better. And then, also there's just a lot of young people calling for basic questions about sex education or about STDs. And, I think the common thread is that young LGBT people across most of the country are really just lacking role models and lacking, grown-ups that they can talk to and ask some of these tough questions without being, afraid of criticism or shame or judgment. And so on the Lifeline, you really have to be prepared for all of those kinds of calls, some in crisis, some, some not, and just be able to meet people where they're at, because it may be that you're the first adult that these young people have ever talked to, where they can ask these kinds of questions freely and not be afraid of being judged for it.
Okay. Now, Kip, you mentioned a minute ago, and Nancy, I want to ask you about this too, about her internalized homophobia. You're saying they don't necessarily recognize it in themselves. They especially may not know or have heard the term. So what do people say to you that, what kind of symptoms do they tell you about that lets you know that that's part of what's going on for them?
It could be that they are very depressed, that they are engaging in self-destructive behaviors, like engaging in unsafe sex, abusing substances. They could also be talking about family issues, and a lot of the people we see have to deal with being rejected by their families and messages that they get from their families. It could be that they talk about how they don't deserve healthy relationships, and they could just talk about that, I feel like something's wrong with me, I don't deserve good things in my life. And that speaks to, you know, a pretty deep level of, to me, something very internal that says something's wrong with me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Similar to, like, what do kids say? I mean, again, it's mostly youth who call up the Trevor Lifeline.
Well, youth might wear that a little bit more on their sleeve. Their messages may be a little bit more blatant. Often there are religious overtones to that about, you know, the shame that they feel for who they are and maybe some religious fear around that. So with kids, it can tend to be a little bit more verbalized or a little bit more expressed. But what Nancy was saying, I think, is a really big one about believing that I don't deserve healthy relationships. And I find, you know, even for people who have been out for a decade or more, that's a belief that is running, you know, both in a lot of my clients' heads. And I also find, just as a gay man living in San Francisco, that that's running in a lot of my friends' heads. And I hear that kind of talk even from people who aren't seeking mental health services, that this sort of belief that I don't deserve healthy relationships is kind of a vestige of that internalized homophobia that people are still struggling to deal with even decades after we've come out of the closet.
Right, right. It's interesting. A few years ago, I worked on a documentary film, and it was shown in Colorado Springs, and one of my friends there, whose house I was staying at, her and her husband, and she saw this film and said something like, oh, this is making me think differently about gay marriage, because I just sort of assumed that gay people shouldn't be able to be married because they can't seem to have sustained stable relationships anyway, but now I kind of understand why not. So at least it was a little bit of an eye-opener. I'm curious to know how, you know, how some of these issues are different for lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender people than they are for other minority groups or other marginalized groups in our society? Because it certainly seems like there must be some similarities.
Well, Kip mentioned religious overtones, and, you know, I think in the last couple of years we've heard a lot from the religious right about what they think of people in the LGBT community, and that's something that most people don't have to, you know, that we're condemned to hell, that we don't deserve families, that we're not fit to raise children. You know, those kinds of messages other people don't necessarily get. The other thing that I think is huge is the family rejection. And it's pretty uncommon if you grow up in a family that they'll embrace you for who you are because you're part of the family. But when queer people grow up in families and come out, oftentimes they're not embraced at all. And I'm sure Kip has talked to lots of kids who have been kicked out of the house because of their sexual orientation. We see people in San Francisco who are homeless, who have tried to, you know, struggle to make it in the city because they had nowhere to go at age 16, 17, 18.
So they're here as opposed to someplace else? Or you mean they moved here from another part of the country, or they grew up here and they're just like... Or
both. Both. Mm-hmm. Either grew up in the Bay Area or moved here from other places.
Do you have any sense at all of how much... There's a you know, fairly large young population of homeless people. How many of those are here because they're gay and were thrown out of their homes, or trans?
There is one study that said 40% of homeless youth identify within the LGBT community.
In San Francisco, you're talking?
That's nationwide.
Nationwide? Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you think it would be, do you have any reason to think it would be higher here?
I don't know.
Okay.
I might suspect that it was.
Yeah.
But I also think even with adults who may not be homeless, that, you know, so many of us came here from other parts of the country for an opportunity to be free, to be ourselves. And I think it really ties into this theme of mental health for LGBT folks that, you know, people come here with all of these hopes and expectations and may find that they're disappointed or may find that they don't have healthier relationships here than they had before, or that they're having such trouble kind of coping with life or finding meaningful and sustainable work, or, you know, all kinds of issues that come up that, you know, I think that also ties into substance use in the Castro or in the LGBT community. But this kind of hope for what it means to come to this place with all of these hopes and expectations about what San Francisco will mean for us, and then finding that maybe it's not everything that we had hoped for.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit on the phone last week, Nancy, about that, this Bay Area bubble that we're in, and it ends up being not quite as friendly and welcoming as people coming here from other parts of the country might wish.
Yeah, I think people do come here looking for community, and San Francisco is fairly transient, and so it's really hard for a lot of folks to find a place to really belong and to find a healthy community. I think probably in most urban areas, a big place where people congregate would be bars, because it's convenient and available and open, and that's not necessarily the healthiest place to create friendships and form a community. So I think, like Kip said, that a lot of people come here and are kind of disillusioned once mm-hmm. they get here, because they still continue to feel isolated.
Right. Well, San Francisco certainly has a lot of bars. On the other hand, even for straight people, on the other hand, it also has a lot of gay and lesbian, queer-oriented social activities that are outside of the bar scene.
Absolutely.
Which at least is an option.
Absolutely.
So that, I suppose it's better than some, you know, small towns someplace. But I'm curious to know, like, how many people come in, or what kind of problems do they bring to you about this not feeling welcome here or having no place else to socialize?
Well, you know, a lot of people feel isolated, and whether that's that could be like leftover feelings from where they came from, because so many people so many of us in the queer community grow up feeling different than everybody else and maybe not quite understanding what that difference is, feeling isolated. And then you get to a place where you don't have to be different, but you still kind of carry that cloak of mm-hmm. I'm different, something's wrong with me. And that might make it more difficult for people to feel connected and to form relationships.
Right. Where did you grow up?
I grew up near Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me a little bit about your, you know, coming out experience?
I came out in my early 20s to my friends and some of my brothers. I didn't come out to my parents till much later. And I was fortunate that, you know, I had, my brothers were understanding. I had a good support system. I then moved to New Orleans that was a lot more gay friendly than the area that I was living in, and was able to develop a really strong community there.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Kip?
Well, I came out in college back in East Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been really fortunate to have a family who has been remarkable
mm-hmm.
and really stepped up and very loving, very supportive. But, you know, I grew up kind of within the social net of the conservative church that I grew up in, and my community was all very church focused. And so for me, coming out meant, you know, losing a lot of the social net and the safety net that I had. And it also meant, you know, when I did come out, that some of the people who had known me since I was a child, you know, said some hurtful things, and I wasn't able to continue in leadership for the youth group at the church anymore because of this sort of kind of stereotype of gay men as pedophiles.
Right.
And so that was really hurtful. But I kind of came out through activism. Like, I found my voice through community organizing and through kind of fighting for change. And then my process in San Francisco has been sort of finding my way back to grad school and now being trained as a therapist at Queer Life Space and still really interested in this process kind of how change happens. But now maybe more interested in how change happens inside, how people change, because I think that's where kind of the change has to start, you know, before we can change politics or change social structures or change the world. Like, the change really starts inside of us. And, you know, to this point, seeking what do people come seeking therapy for, you know, and also maybe to this point about disillusionment when people come to the Castro, I think there's so much pressure, you know, often to be having a good time, to be fun. And that often takes the form of, you know, a lot of using substances, a lot of sex. And there's so much pressure around that, that often it's really hard just to be real with people.
Right.
And to make a deeper, more authentic type of contact with others. And I think people are hungry for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's why it's really important that a place like Queer Life Space is right there in the Castro, that here, like, from the community, here is a place in the Castro where you can reach out to other queer folk and try to make some real contact about what's happening inside without all that pressure, you know, to be the life of the party, to be having a good time, to be sexy, but just to be yourself. And it's so simple, but it's really hard to find that and to establish that with other people.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Nancy Heilner, executive director and therapist at Queer Life Space, a nonprofit counseling center in San Francisco's Castro District, and Kip Williams, a therapist in training at Queer Life Space and a counselor on the Trevor Lifeline, a nationwide 24/7 crisis and suicide intervention hotline for LGBT youth. We're talking about emotional and mental health. Now, you just mentioned, it seemed like a perfect segue into talking about some of the groups that you offer. We're talking about a place where you can talk about meaningful stuff instead of just being happy and being gay. So tell us about some of the
people.
In
a more meaningful way. Well, Kip was mentioning substance use or abuse, and one of the groups we offer is for people who want to learn how to abstain from substances. We also have a relationship group for men. We have a trans support group, an intersex support group, I'm blanking. We have a group for men with disabilities where they can come and talk about the issues and obstacles that they have to face in their lives. And we have a group for queer people of color. We felt like it was really important to have a safe space within our space, particularly for people of color, because San Francisco is fairly diverse, but particularly in the Castro tends to be more on the Caucasian side. And we felt it really important to have a place, again, that's welcoming to everyone in mm-hmm. our community.
What kind of stories do you hear from non-white people, non-white gay people who are, you know, talking about the kind of discrimination they face from within the LGBT community?
I think and this is not I'm generalizing, so but I know that with some African American men, there's a sense of feeling like being tokens and not really being looked at as a real person. I think with a lot of people, there's just an overall sense of discrimination that maybe there's places, particularly in the Castro, where they're not welcome. A lot of services that are offered are not offered by people of color. And when someone walks into a place, they don't see people similar to them. It makes sense that they're not quite sure if this is a safe place for them to be.
Mm-hmm. I noticed on your website that you do have a commitment to diversity, and as far as your interns, graduate interns, mm-hmm. that you're looking for, you're specifically looking for people of color to fill some of those roles. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So when we interview our interns and our trainees for our counseling program, we want to make sure that at least half of the trainees and interns we have are people of color, and we've been able to surpass that goal this first year, and I'm planning on that happening this second year as well. We also want to have supervisors of color, because I think it's important for the trainees to have a clinical supervisor that they can go to and, you know, discuss issues that might come up for them as therapists of color. We haven't been quite as successful in that way. We're always looking for clinical therapists who would be willing to volunteer their time to supervise, though.
Now, can you tell me how does one go about getting service? Is there a waiting list? Because, you know, I realize you're not a huge organization yet, mm-hmm. and New Leaf closed and left maybe a lot of people in the lurch a couple of years ago. So how... You know, is is the, how many people are you seeing a year, first of all?
Since we've opened, which is a year and a half, we've provided services to about 215 people. We've probably taken many, many more calls than that. And we do have a fee for our services. It's a sliding scale fee. And we slide down to $20 for individual session, $40 for a couple session, and either $5 to $10 for our groups. Chris Holleran is the person that most people will talk to when they call our intake line. He does all the screenings. And for people who can't afford even the $20, he'll refer them to other places in the community that offer services for free. The Alliance Health Project is a big place where we make a lot of referrals. People also contact Chris via email. So we get either phone calls or emails from people asking about our services. Chris arranges the intakes. All of our intakes are free of charge. There's no cost for the initial intake because we're not quite sure if it's going to work for that particular client. Sure.
So there's no cost up front. Doesn't cost you anything to go in and check
it
out.
And talk to Chris or whoever does the intakes. And at this point in time, we have no waiting list. And we're really happy and proud that we've been able to bring on more and more volunteer clinicians as our client caseload has increased.
That's pretty amazing. And you have space for it?
We're getting close to not having enough space. But so far, we've had space. One thing that's going to be happening in the next couple of months is that we actually have to move. Our landlord has not renewed our lease, and so we're currently looking for new space. We're hoping to take this, what was initially a pretty devastating situation, and create an opportunity to have a bigger space so that we can expand a little bit more. We hope to be able to stay in the Castro, ideally as close to the Castro as possible.
So anybody out there with space to rent, let Nancy know.
Yes. And anyone out there with donations to provide to help us with the cost of moving and expanding our services, we're always looking for help from our community. And we really believe that, you know, for everyone in the community to provide some kind of help, whether it be volunteer or financial, that they'll all play a part in helping our community thrive.
Mm-hmm. Can people donate on our website?
Yes, they can.
What's the website?
www.queerlifespace.org.
Okay, good. We got that plug in there. We'll give it again at the end of the show, too. A new law was signed by Governor Jerry Brown last year, which made anti-gay conversion therapy for minors illegal. That is illegal for mental health professionals to try to cure kids of being other than heterosexual. It was supposed to go into effect January 1st, but it's been challenged and now it's under court review. Is that right?
Yes.
And I'm curious to know how, any idea how long this court review might take? Or is it just, are you worried about this, or is it just a matter of time in your opinion?
I'm thinking it's just a matter of time. I'm a little worried about the limited people who can continue to provide conversion therapy because of the court's decision. But I'm pretty sure that it will go into effect. You know, and I just want to talk a little bit about that because you asked earlier about presenting problems that clients have. And, you know, one thing I really didn't talk about was trauma. And there's an amazing array of events that can happen in people's lives that can be very traumatic. And conversion therapy is one of them. And I have worked with people who have been forced to go to therapy to try to change themselves. And if there's going to be something that really feeds into that internalized homophobia that I mentioned that we talked about earlier, would be that sense of that what happens in conversion therapy. I mean, therapy, you're supposed to help a person become who they are and to feel good about who they are. Conversion therapy does the opposite of that.
Yeah, I've had some definite interactions with people I've known who've been involved in various conversion therapies, and it just sounds so awful. I can't even believe it. I mean, there was one guy I knew who even his conversion therapist ended up making a move on him. So to just, I wouldn't be surprised now if there's a lot of people in those position of gay conversion therapy who have their own issues that they haven't dealt with yet. But I'm making a blanket generalization, and I shouldn't do that.
I might agree with you on that.
It's ugly as a clinician, too, because it's such a perversion of what therapy is really about. You know,
right.
It's offensive to see people using kind of the facade of therapy to twist people's minds that way.
I want to ask you just a little bit more about the Trevor Lifeline in the last minute or two that we have. Do you get, is there a big difference in the kind of calls that you get depending on where in the country people are?
Nope.
No? Okay.
No, I would have thought that too. you know, maybe the bulk of the calls at the Trevor Lifeline, you know, perhaps come from, you know, the Midwest or the South. But, you know, we get calls from right here in San Francisco. You know, there's no place that is free of homophobia and heterosexism. It's everywhere. And, you know, I think, you know, there are young people here who are calling about bullying, who are calling about acceptance, who are calling about the same issues that, you know, people anywhere in the country are calling about.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the number handy?
1-888-4U-TREVOR. And that's a lifeline. It is a phone number that's meant for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth, 13 to 24, who are in crisis or who are thinking about killing themselves. Round the clock, like you said, 24 hours, always someone there to take your call.
And you can get the number again,
1-888-4U-TREVOR.
And Trevor is spelled T-R-E-V-O.
That's right.
Right. And if you want more information about the Trevor Project, it's thetrevorproject.org. Okay. I want to thank my guests. Nancy, do you have anything last thing you need to say?
I'm just going to push again for donations. We're a volunteer-run organization, and we are really passionate about the work that we do, but we really do need help from the entire LGBTQ community to continue the wonderful services we're offering.
I want to thank my guests, Nancy Heilner, Queer Life Space Therapist and Executive Director, and Kip Williams, Queer Life Space Therapist and Training, and a phone counselor on the Trevor Lifeline, a 24-hour national crisis and suicide prevention hotline for queer youth. I'll give you that phone number again. It's 1-888-4-U-TREVOR. And you can learn more about Queer Life Space online at queerlifespace.org. Do you want to give a phone number for people to call if they have questions about becoming a patient or
sure, it's
client?
415-358-2000.
358-2000. Thanks so much, both of you, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Out in the Bay is supported in part by Perfect Outings, active epicurean adventures offering highly curated small group private tours for discerning travelers. Learn more at perfectoutings.com. If you missed part of our discussion, you can hear the whole program on our website, outinthebay.com. It should be up by 9 o'clock tonight, Thursday night. Speaking of our website, have you seen the redesign yet? Podcasts are still free. Downloading the Stitcher app to hear us on your devices is also free. Now you can also hear about a dozen of our favorite shows from our 8 years on the air. My personal favorites include interviews with Phyllis Lyon and the late Del Martin, who talk about gay and lesbian life in San Francisco in the 1950s. Judy Shepard, Matthew Shepard's mom, talking about his awful murder and how she became an anti-violence activist because of it. And a feature on Liberace, glitziest pianist of the last century. Lots more. Click the plain favorites button on our homepage, outinthebay.com, and let us know what you think of the new site. Thanks to Jamie Borshek for the redesign. Learn more about Jamie at her website, jtothebee.com. That's jtothebee.com. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KALW, our host station, for studio use and airtime, and tonight's engineer, Joanne Marr. We've been producing Out in the Bay for about 8.5 years now. We love your words of encouragement. We'd love your financial support, too. As an independent production, we depend on community support. It's easy and tax-deductible on our website, outinthebay.com. Don't forget matching funds from your employer. Have your boss help pay for Queer Radio. You'll find that info when you click through from the donate button at outinthebay.com. Thank you. Our theme music was composed and performed by San Francisco musician Holly Ann Mead. We'd love to hear from you with segment suggestions, general comments, and questions. So write to us, Eric at outinthebay.com and Marilyn at outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.